Hello and welcome to the ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast, brought to you by Nessel & Associates. Nessel & Associates is an ERP organizational change management firm serving the private equity industry. I'm your co-host, Jonathan Donald, the founder of Invert Ventures, a change strategy firm, and I'm here with my friend and colleague, Dr. Jack Nessel, the founder of Nessel & Associates, and the host of the ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast. The ERP Organizational Change Journal seeks to share expertise, insight, and create effective conversation to help guide ERP organizational change to real, measurable, and verified success, expanding what we can see so we can act in a more effective way. We seek to promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community. The primary purpose of this podcast is to discuss, share, and reflect upon effective and efficient ways in which to realize ERP organizational change success. We will discuss the people, process, and technological components of ERP organizational change. This podcast is intended as a forum to study, share, and discuss ERP organizational change. It's our intention for this to be a collaboration tool and resource. We hope that you find this podcast useful as we share lessons learned, discover best practices, and explore the human elements and components of ERP organizational change. Our podcast draws on knowledge from extensive research, collaborative learning, practitioner experience of both project successes and project failures. A general review of the themes of ERP and organizational change practice, literature, and research suggests that understanding and critically having an awareness of tactics founded in principle is fundamental to ERP organizational change success. Our podcast will discuss these tactics, explore these approaches, and discover the principles that they are founded upon so that they may prove to be useful in addressing ERP organizational change challenges and risks.
Thank you, Jonathan. I'm always so excited and looking forward to fun conversations with you and our guest. We seek to promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community. As we are a podcast that desires to engage in valuable insight into the world of ERP organizational change success with interviews and roundtable talk, our guests include experts and pioneers in a field, organizational stakeholders, practitioners, and researchers. Our podcast is a platform for those seeking to share, learn, and reflect on ERP organizational change success.
In this episode, we will discuss training evaluation with Dr. Jim Kirkpatrick. Dr. Kirkpatrick is a senior consultant for Kirkpatrick Partners. He's a thought leader in training evaluation and the creator of the New World Kirkpatrick model. Dr. Kirkpatrick consults for Fortune 500 companies around the world, including companies such as Harley-Davidson, Booz Allen Hamilton, L'Oreal, Clarion, Ingersoll Rand, Honda, the Royal Air Force, and GE Healthcare. Jim has written and co-written three books with his father, Don Kirkpatrick, the creator of the Kirkpatrick Four Levels. Additionally, he's written three books with his business partner, Wendy. Those books are Kirkpatrick Then and Now, Training on Trial, and The Brunei Window Washer, Bringing Business Partnerships to Life.
Thank you, Jonathan. So today we will discuss some principles of training that promote team performance and organizational learning. Dr. Kirkpatrick will share his work and explain why proper and effective training, training evaluation, and training application is so critical to meeting desired ERP organizational change business goals. Dr. Kirkpatrick will describe the New World Kirkpatrick model, which provides the basis for a tactical tool for practical applications of training principles based in sound research. I can tell you that both in practice and in my own studies, I use the Kirkpatrick model extensively. And professionally, I believe that through research, ERP organizational change plans perhaps do not incorporate enough consideration for effective training. That is, training approaches founded and grounded in sound research. And the key lies in models such as the Kirkpatrick model. Dr. Kirkpatrick, thank you for being on the show today. I'm honored and I greatly admire your work.
Well, I'm glad to be here. I'm looking forward to it. Thanks for the kind words so far.
Dr. Kirkpatrick, welcome to the show. Really, I'm really excited for this conversation. Jack?
Yeah, and thanks again. All right, let's dive in. So, Dr. Kirkpatrick, I know that the Kirkpatrick model has evolved over multiple decades through application by learning and development professionals around the world. And you mentioned on your website that in 1954, your father, Dr. Donald Kirkpatrick, wrote his PhD dissertation on evaluation of training for industrial supervisors. Like most training and development professors, he had a genuine desire to know if his training was making a difference for the supervisors he trained, end quote. Before we get into the details of the model, Dr. Kirkpatrick, can you provide our listeners with some background as to the evolution of the Kirkpatrick model and what drove its creation and development?
I would be glad to. Well, the four levels, briefly, level one is reaction. How do people react to the training? Level two is learning. Did they learn something from the good learning methods that were used? Level three is behavior. If people actually applied what they learned on the job. Level four, results. What kind of results came from the performance of the behaviors that were learned? Now, those four levels are the same, 1954, 1974, 1994, and today they are still the same four levels, but the model and the operationalism and even the conceptualizing of the model is really different today than it has been traditionally. The main difference is that we don't start with level one, because for six decades now, the whole world has pretty much been starting with level one reaction. And they do a reaction sheet, smile sheet, is everybody happy? They do level two, some kind of knowledge testing, pre and post test. And then maybe level three, a 90-day survey to find out what's going on in the field. And level four has been, well, it's too high up. It's too distant from training. We kind of just ignore that. And that's been going on as long as I remember the four levels, which is too long, because that interpretation of the model doesn't work very well, because the heavy load is on training, not on performance. And the New World model, which I guess I am the one responsible for, and a whole lot of other people, is about focusing more on level three and the outcomes of level four. So we've had to flip a dear old dad on his head and begin with some kind of a business needs analysis. What are the outcomes that are expected? What are the performance expectations in the field that need to occur for level four to happen? And then and only then do we deal with what kind of intervention. So the New World is really much more focused on helping people perform their job better. And, you know, I'm going to be rather bold about this, but, you know, the people that, and the majority of professionals in learning and development, are still focusing on delivering training. And they're focusing now on, of course, doing it virtually to counter the COVID situation, but it's still training and it's still learning. And the secret to our success and our future is going to be focusing on level three and level four. That's the New World.
I just want to follow up here because you sparked my curiosity, and I want to make sure I'm presenting this in a way that really lets our listeners jump in. The level three, level four switch, is that focusing primarily on outcomes first to align the training to the business objective? Am I understanding that correctly?
You're pretty good with that. It does begin with outcomes first. Okay, but you know, when I hear people saying, we are going to be focusing on results, we are going to be focusing on outcomes, that is still not going to work.
Yeah.
Because what they're doing is they're going back and delivering training, hoping that level one and two will jump over the chasm of level three and somehow magically create the outcomes. What we want people to do is identify the outcomes that we're looking for and make sure you spend time with the project owners, senior leaders, to define what is the end in mind and what are the signs of progress along the way. But the focus has to be on level three performance. And that the level four is a byproduct of the good work done at level three, and people are still very resistant to start crossing the bridge into the world of work, because it's kind of a precarious situation over there. It's safer to be doing level one, level two training, but it's not nearly as effective.
So Dr. Kirkpatrick, if I may, just to distill this down for our listeners, what you're saying is that the New World Kirkpatrick model is based on four levels of evaluation. And those would be 1, reaction, 2, learning, 3, behavior, and 4, results. And I think what you're suggesting is that in terms of implementing an effective and efficient organizational learning plan starts with the alignment, you know, having a strategy that is aligned with the organization. So that means you start with your desired outcomes, right? You
yes.
start with your desired results. You have the conversations there, and then you build your plan going backwards. So you work from our desired outcome or our results to our behavior, then to our learning, and then down to reaction. But then when you go to deploy and implement this methodology or this model, then you work your way back up that chain of reaction, and then you measure learning. Then you measure the effectiveness of the behavior or the effectiveness of applying that learning to the floor, so to speak, right, to the workplace. And then you have a mechanism in place to test the results of that application of the training, or in other words, your organizational outcomes. Was that a fair breakdown?
That wasn't fair. That was excellent. That was better than fair.
Great.
Really, that was, you know, you said that beautifully. When planning, just like good people that develop learning, design and develop, they plan. They don't just throw a bunch of slides together on a, you know, on a PowerPoint and say, here, teach this. They do storyboarding and planning it. You plan with level 4 in mind first, and then level 3, spending time talking to line managers and supervisors. What kind of performance gaps are you facing that need to be closed in order to reach the results? And you reverse engineer it. But then after the training, you execute it 1, 2, 3, 4, making sure that you use good adult learning theory at 1 to create the learning at 2. And then, you know, we'll be talking more in this interview, I'm sure, about level 3 and then level 4. And then when it's time to win your case, we are not safe until our senior leaders say, job well done. Again, you do it 1, 2, 3, 4 to show the progression through the levels that hopefully will provide evidence and cause them to say, we see how this has all worked together. Good job.
So Dr. Kirkpatrick, before we go on to our next question, could you, you know, so we described to our listeners those 4 levels of the model, and you start at the top, you build your plan, you work your way down, and then you implement going back up your model of the 4 steps. Can you maybe just take a sentence or 2 to describe what you're measuring or what the objective is at each one of these stages, reaction, learning, behavior, and results?
Well, you use the word measuring. I want everyone to be clear that the Kirkpatrick model and any good evaluation model is just not always about metrics and analytics and measurement, because we are really trying to evaluate what is truthfully going on as far as outcomes, truthfully happening in performance and in the classroom. So we talk about observations and measurements because we yeah. use a variety of qualitative trends and all that. So I know people yeah. use measurement. Sometimes they mean it. Sometimes it's not. But level 4, you are looking at not only did it work, you know, what ultimate outcomes would cause the senior leaders to say, job well done. You better know what those are. You better negotiate and agree with those and know that those are measures that you're going to have to be probably borrowing from the business. Now, level 4 is also about signs along the way of progress. So we are also monitoring and measuring progress, outcomes that come from measuring level 3, which is the performance of the behavior. So level 3 is really trying to make sure people apply what they learn. So that's most of it. And then we're also measuring the behaviors. Are they actually doing what they're supposed to do? And level 2, pretty much the world thinks it's about knowledge, which is a very poor predictor that people can do their job. I mean, you can pass a test. It doesn't mean you should be in an air traffic control tower bringing in a plane. So it's really more of Bloom's taxonomies of the higher levels of learning, of the skills and the attitude and the, you know, synthesis and those kind of things. And level 1, people think it's a measure of customer satisfaction. Are people happy? Well, we aren't so much into that, because people can be happy if you just sit back and let the instructor do all the talking. What we're really measuring and monitoring at level one is their level of engagement and are they finding relevance in what is being trained. Because if they're engaged and the instruction is helping them find relevance, they will learn. And then, of course, you've got to convert that learning into doing.
So important. Great points. Thank you. So, Dr. Kirkpatrick, what would you say are some of the most common employee evaluation pitfalls, and how would you correct those? Can you provide our listeners maybe with some examples?
Yeah. One is, and I don't mean to be critical here, but just to point out, is our language that we use. You talked about a learning path. And a learning path or skills gaps or learning objectives or competency models, or we provide learning solutions, you know, the learning journey, all that stuff, that's killing us because we are using our words and wondering why don't people on the other side of the bridge get excited about what we're talking about is because we're asking them, we're speaking a different language than they are. They're not interested in those things. We should be whispering those things to ourselves and working on those, but we should be talking about a learning and performance journey. We are providing learning and performance solutions. We have to be using their words, what's in their wheelhouse, rather than being arrogant enough to think they're going to get excited about closing skills gaps. They're going to be excited about if we help their people do their jobs better. So we should really be spending time listening, earning the right, and learning their language and become kind of dual citizens between the learning world and the performance world and use their language, especially with senior leaders. So that's the thing that I would encourage everybody to do right away. And then from then on, the main thing is focusing on learning that is closely, directly related to performance and spending a whole lot less time on general learning and fire hose learning and, you know, two-week, you know, learning, but making sure we're doing the shorter things that are directly connected to performance gaps. That is what's going to win the day for us.
Great insight.
Dr. Kirkpatrick, I'm struck by how you put a foot on the learning and development side and on the business side and bridge that.
Yes.
How I want to highlight to our listeners how important I think this is. And I think this really relates to our next question here, which is how do you actually go and speak to executives and sell organizations on the value and understanding of effective training? You know, where are the challenges that come up in these conversations?
Well, the first thing that I suggest people do and people that follow our model is they kind of scan the horizon and what's on the other side of the bridge. They're looking for line managers and supervisors that are open-minded and mission-minded. They look for senior leaders that are open-minded and mission-minded, and they start to have those conversations with them. Don't worry about the naysayers. Don't worry about people that are skeptical about this. But look for someone that is willing to hear you say training alone is not powerful enough. There's no training we could possibly deliver that is going to lead to those results you're looking for. But we have a better idea. Are you willing to hear? And those people will say, yeah, lay it on us. And then you talk about collaboration. You talk about working together. And you talk about focusing on the critical behaviors of level three rather than on the learning objectives at level two. And then you just kind of get them to agree, huh? How about if we try one program? I know you're doing an onboarding program or you do a leadership program. How about if we get together and figure out how we are going to be focusing together much more on the performance and helping people and compelling people to perform their job and feel good about what they're doing? And the outcomes will come from that, and you will see and we will all see how much better that is than relying on training, and then we can start to show others, and you guys can be the witnesses for that success. That's how it works. To be honest, you guys, you call it a training evaluation model, and that's what the world knows it as, but it's really a change management model trying to convert from a training event model to a learning and performance package approach to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dr. Kirkpatrick, that's my background in change, and the focus on behavior really made that clear to me. And I want to highlight this for our listeners. the training is to produce that behavior, not the other way around in here.
Very good.
And the observation, to tie it back to your earlier point, behavior is observable. So that gives you another metric that's qualitative to look at. What a fascinating way to have that conversation. Thank you, Dr. Kirkpatrick.
Well, thank you for that, because you know that you can't tsunami some kind of model like this across a culture. There's too much resistance. You know, human nature would put a dead stop, but you've got to earn it bit by bit. And what we currently do is we buy expensive competency models and HR competency models, and we try and shoehorn it across the bridge and say, here is what we want your people to do. It should be the opposite, finding out what the performance needs are and then develop our competency model from that, rather than trying to say, here it is, we want you guys to use it.
That's so right.
I'm going to borrow many quotes from you already, Dr. Kirkpatrick, on this conversation, but you'd mentioned, I think if you just think about this, it's such a powerful statement, and I personally think we could talk about this for a couple of hours, but you said training is not enough. And if you think about it, that's a pretty powerful statement if people take the time to really understand what you mean by that. But then you also said you can't tsunami training across the culture. And I couldn't agree more. And I think that with a model such as yours, if anything, at the end of the day, it improves the culture of the organization. I mean, this is actually a tool that improves communication. It improves alignment. It improves, you know, really communication and understanding what the business objectives are. So I think it's a very powerful tool to improve the culture, and especially the organizational learning part of culture, right?
You know what else is a big plus with it? It's when you start with the end in mind, like a GPS destination, you know, and then you build a GPS package, which includes learning and includes performance and guiding people and monitoring and redirecting along the way. It saves money, because if you start with level one, you're throwing all kinds of training on the wall, hoping some of it sticks. When you do it from a reverse point of view, everything is targeted. The performance gaps are clearly identified, and so is the learning objectives then and the competencies that need to be addressed, and you're not wasting a lot of time and money on things that are fun and appear to be valuable but really aren't influencing performance and much less results.
Absolutely. So, Dr. Kirkpatrick, how does accountability fit into the picture? That is, who's ultimately responsible for effective evaluation and training, and how are they held accountable?
Ooh, you should be whispering that word these days, accountability. Not very popular, because really, I mean, it's true that when you're trying to hold people accountable, they may say, oh, you're targeting me, or you're trying to take away my rights or something. But there are really good ways to hold people accountable. And to me, this is about accountability at level three, because it isn't our job as learning professionals, now learning and performance professionals, to make sure people do their job. It is the responsibility of the training graduates on the other side to take responsibility, and their supervisors and their peers. But we have to partner with them as mutual accountability, as we will help build a package that is designed post-training follow-up that includes monitoring, and it includes support and reinforcement and recognition and short training bursts on the job directly tied to performance. That is the kind of accountability we need, you know, making sure that we are helping people do their best job. And if we just leave it to human nature, people will like our training and give us fives on our smile sheets and pass our tests, and they will go. And the research says about 85% of them, without that accountability and support, they will drift back to what they were doing before, what's familiar, what's comfortable. And we're not bad people, because I'm in that 85% that we have to stack the deck with that accountability and the warm fuzzies to make sure that we are helping people do their best job and they'll love us for it. And that's where you say it really creates a positive culture, because they will thank us, you know, for that, and say, you have not only helped me do my job better, but now that we have these leading indicators of level four, I can see that I am contributing to the department goals and maybe even beyond.
Sure.
Before we move to the next question, I really want to sit in on that answer, because the accountability piece, to me, highlights the change side of the model, that you're not after just the training. You're after sustainment of the results that the training produces as they are effective for the business, both in behaviors and in measurable metrics. Am I understanding that correctly, Dr. Kirkpatrick?
You sure are. You guys really get this, and it's a pleasure talking with you about it. I had someone 2 weeks ago tell me that they want me to help them select a new leadership model. I said, well, what's going on with your other one? They said, well, we've tried four in the last 6 years. None of them worked. You know, we're going to try another one. What would you suggest? I said, well, I wouldn't suggest anything, because the same thing's going to happen. Most likely, the ones that you have selected are good models. You have not executed them properly. You are relying on the activities and what kind of superhero am I, or what color is my wheel or whatever it is. But what has probably happened is you didn't start with the end in mind. What were the business objectives for that leadership model? And especially, what were the new leaders supposed to do on the job? And I'll bet that there was not much talk about that. And unless you hold them accountable and give them all the help they need to be successful, it'll appear that the model was defective, but the models aren't defective. The execution is, because of a lack of focus on accountability for people doing what they're supposed to do.
Absolutely. So powerful here. And I want to use that frame as we go to the next question. You know, how would you explain this to our listeners when you're talking to organizations and leaders on how to create and advocate for an organizational culture that understands and critically values effective training evaluation, or as you said earlier, using the Kirkpatrick model for changing the focus of our way we go about training?
Well, you guys, you know, two words come to my mind that can get you out of really uncomfortable situations with you, which you will find yourself in when you're starting to talk about these things. One is mission. You can say, we are really looking at the mission, the strategic plan of the organization, the purpose behind it. Right now, we're doing a lot of work with the Marine Corps and the mission of the Marines. So you can, that's a good fallback if people are saying, why are you talking about those strategic things? Well, that's because that's what the intent of this is to contribute to the mission. The other one is truth in evaluation. And when people are doing a smile sheet at level one, pre and post test at level two, and a 90-day survey at level three, they are getting very little of the truth, and a lot of the data they're getting is untruth. And so we use a concept called blended evaluation, which is very simply using a variety of methods and a variety of sources at each of the levels in order to get as close to the truth as you can of what's really working, what isn't working, and then you can make intelligent decisions about making changes and modifying things so that you're maximizing the learning, maximizing the performance, and ultimately maximizing the results. So those words, mission and truth, you know, try and make an argument for those, because those are pretty hard to argue. And I think you can usually make a good case with those two words.
So that gives our listeners, and I can certainly take that to heart as well, a firmer base to stand on when having those challenging discussions with leaders.
Yeah, and it's exactly right. And they're saying that they're speaking our language, you know, because evaluation is not about collecting data, storing it in some LMS, and spitting out some pretty report. It's about collecting a variety of data, both qualitative and quantitative, doing an analysis and assessing it. Mm-hmm. What kind of conclusions can we draw as we look at this together? And then especially, what kind of improvements can we make, particularly in the field and to a lesser degree in the training, in order to maximize the performance and results? So try to encourage all you guys listening here to try and educate that evaluation is probably not what your organization is doing, but it should be that analysis, drawing conclusions, making recommendations, and being part of the change of improvements.
Yeah. Dr. Kirkpatrick, that reminded me of actually one of my favorite quotes in your book. And I'm going to share that with our listeners really quick. And again, the idea of the Kirkpatrick model, or one of the takeaways here, is start with the end in mind, you know, and then your book says, quote, before training can be evaluated, however, it is important that it is designed well from the start so that there is some value to evaluate and report. So I think, you know, to your point, it's not about just reports and coming up with, you know, these nice colorful spreadsheets or whatever. There's an end game in mind there, and it starts with that end game. So I just think that's a really nice quote.
You know, if you get into a difficult time trying to explain this, the GPS metaphor works beautifully. You know, you want to know the destination, but you can't then just jump in your car, making sure you're all trained up on how to drive it and you're all packed and head for it. That's what we've been doing. You know, the GPS package, that is the guidance along the way, we are asking instructional designers now to not just design instruction, but design the package that includes what happens before training and especially what happens after training in order to get people there. I heard you guys use the words effectively and efficiently. How do you get to the destination, the contribution to the mission, in the best way you can, saving the most time and effort and resources? And that's the key of it, is the journey, not the beginning and not just the end.
Dr. Kirkpatrick, I want to highlight this because what you've just expressed with the GPS system to me is building in a course correction model as part of the evaluation and training system.
Well, brilliant, honestly, because the evaluation, a lot of people think it's about gathering data at the end. Were they satisfied? Did they learn? Did they apply it? Did we see results? We don't want to rely on chance. Hopefully, the chance will lead us to each of those four stops. This is about course correction along the way, fingers on the pulse, redirecting, recalculating. Based on watch out for police ahead, there's a car on the shoulder, bridge out,
exactly. You know,
all those kind of things, especially in the field. That is where you can honestly offer 10 times the power and the influence as you can in making tweaks in the course material. So all of you guys are just encouraging you to cross that bridge, look for those open-minded people, and just start to have these conversations with them. And someone will say, do you think you can help us? And you can say, you know what? Yeah. I think if we work together, I think we can.
Yeah. So it's not just about training. It's about effective and efficient training. And there's a big difference, right, in terms of time, money, effort, and impact, right, and organizational success. There could be a very big difference between training and effective and efficient training. They're two totally different things.
And to me, the training that is closely connected to performance is the key.
Yeah, absolutely.
That is the key.
Yeah. So, Dr. Kirkpatrick, there are a lot of perhaps fads that have come and gone over the years, and some models have certainly been much more successful than others. And I know why, but I want to hear you say it for our listeners. Being nearly 70 years since the Kirkpatrick model was born, why has it stood the test of time? How has it stood the test of time?
You know what? I got to tell you that a lot of it is the heart of my dad. You know, to be honest, he knew more and was a greater expert when it came to communication and HR kinds of things and supervision and change management. You ready for this one? He really didn't know all that much about evaluation, but he happened to write four articles in 1959 that got published, and all of a sudden people call it the Kirkpatrick model. They call it Kirkpatrick's four levels. 15 years later, people were telling him about that. He said, what's the Kirkpatrick model? What are the four levels? Well, he was no dummy. And then, of course, he would become the expert. But it was because that there was nothing. There was a void. So at least it was a simple structure, four levels that people could use. And just the kind of person he was, the engaging kind of guy he was, I think it became a beloved model. But to be honest, it wasn't very effective, because for decades it's been smile sheets, pre and post test, and a 90-day survey. But it's everywhere I go around the world. Oh, Kirkpatrick, very beloved, very famous. And now I'm saying, that's right. Now let's make sure it's as powerful as it can be.
Interesting. So what would you have to say, in terms of based on principles? You know, earlier you talked about L&D or learning and development principles, and this whole idea and the way you broke it down. And I know, again, we could discuss the Kirkpatrick model for several hours. But, you know, the thing from my work and my research, and again, I'm a big student and fan of your work, but I think it's important for our listeners to understand that it's really based in some fundamental principles. And I think in part, it's been effective, right? I mean, it's well received, it's been effective, and yes, it's proven. It works. You know, again, for me, if I really had to say why it works and why it's proven and why it's so effective for organizations and organizational learning and organizational success, it's because it's based in basic proven principles. Is that a fair statement?
That is fair. And I'll tell you, one of those principles is human nature. People do not do naturally what we're supposed to do. We do the things we shouldn't do. That's just kind of how 85% of us are, you know, are wired. You know, we need help. We need to stack the deck. We need all the help we can get to do the things that are new for us, things that are uncomfortable, things that stretch us. We need someone that stands alongside us, or someone that gives us a little push, or someone that stands ahead and said, come on, you can cross. I'm here to help you. And we can use technology with that, which has been used fabulously, to offer those kind of accountability and support structures. So the biggest success is because we understand that human nature is not going to take the training and on their own go and do it. And that's why people are making millions and millions of dollars, because they keep sending them new training products because the other ones don't work, you know, but inherently they won't work because of human nature. So if we understand that, I think you understand the key to, you know, the new world model.
Absolutely. And if I may share just a side note, you know, I know in your book, and I'm actually trying to look for it as we speak, but you had some barriers to success that you listed. And I apologize, I'm not finding it right at the moment. But I know that, and this was through illustration with some case studies, and some of the barriers to success that you mentioned in some of these case studies, the way they were, I think, resolved was working with L&D professionals, learning and development professionals, or based on principles. Here it is, I found it. The adjustment you made, for example, was, quote, L&D worked with area managers to select participants who had the necessary experience and ability to implement the new learning, meaning they had the basic principles of learning and development. Is that what the idea is there? It's just in your book on the case studies, just the idea that the way that you respond to some of the challenges is based in principle. It's based in learning and development principles.
It is, and that is true. I tell you, a lot of it is another barrier is that people move forward with the science of L&D before the time is right. And what that means is we can go charging ahead, throw together a bridge and go crossing over and start interviewing people and doing focus groups and observations at level 3 before we've made a good case for it. And the senior leaders and line managers are going to say, what are you doing here? And what we first need to do is to connect with them and spend time listening and talking and earning the right. We don't want to charge across the bridge like it's an invasion of their turf. And we have to make sure with the senior leaders that this is what we're going to do, but we're coming across with a white flag saying, hey, we're together. We are partners now, rather than it's the business side versus the cost center training side. Right. And so I think we really have to build those partnerships. We talk about building bridges, the art of it, before the science of it really works effectively.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, when I look at your model again, which is reaction, learning, behavior, and results, and there's a lot of great work in learning and development. And I think that great work is underappreciated many times in practice. But learning and development, like you said, it's critical. It's absolutely critical. But learning is one piece of your model, right? Your model presents a comprehensive package, as you called it, for the effective application of learning in a way that meets organizational objectives and goals. So it actually goes beyond some learning and development principles, right? Like, for instance, I know there's some controversy around learning styles. Do individuals actually have learning styles or not? And we're actually going to have some folks on the show to talk about that with us. But so it seems like, especially at that stage 2, that step 2 learning, and then some into behavior, that's where a lot of the L&D, learning and development practices founded in principle, can be very, very effective. But again, your package is a little bit beyond just the learning. It's the application of it. It's the strategy. Oh, it's the alignment.
Very good. And you know, what I would call it is learning, development, and performance, because development is still preparing people. It goes beyond learning. Learning is you're able to do something. Development is I'm kind of moving ahead in my capabilities and my abilities. But at some point, the development, you know, when the bell rings, it is time to perform. So people right. that really look at themselves as learning and development and performance professionals, that is the bridge. And that then will announce there's a new sheriff in town, and it is us. We have redefined ourselves. And here's one comment based on what you said about learning styles. And yeah, there's something to that. But what people are doing is they're focusing so much on delivering the training to account for all the different learning styles. Blended learning, wonderful work that's done, but enough already. What my thought is, and what I try and do is get to people to work more on performance styles. You know, what are the different styles of the different generations of people that will inspire them to work, not just help them learn, because we can cram all this stuff in their head, but we better start figuring out what's going to inspire these people to do their job. And it will be different levers and different motivations. And those are the kind of things that we should be talking about, not with each other, but with the line managers and supervisors, and figuring out what is the package that will address each of the motivational styles rather than just the learning styles. It's time to kind of graduate across the bridge and be fine-tuning those kind of things rather than, you know, 10 years of the same stuff over and over with the learning styles.
Yeah, well said. Thank you.
Before we move to the next question, I want to get your thoughts on a comment.
Uh-huh.
When you were talking about the foundation of the Kirkpatrick model and the human nature component of it, I never cease to be surprised when someone responds to training with uncertainty and worries of competency or power. And I'm amazed that organizations respond like that. That doesn't come up regularly. One of the things I'd like to get your thoughts on here is, how do you so easily put yourself in the shoes of the senior executive, as you just demonstrated in that conversation with Jack? Because that's a mindset and approach I don't see in learning and development, and I don't see it in many functional support areas in organizations. And the way you just did that, I found masterful.
No.
And I want to highlight that for our listeners.
And I always try and do it respectful, you know, and truthful. But if you got time, I got a quick story here.
Absolutely.
How this kind of came to be is I was doing some training at ASTD, went back when they called it American Society for Training and Development.
Okay.
It was maybe 10 years ago or something, and I don't remember what city, but there were different programs going on, and I decided to take a little stroll down to the bookstore and see what was going on down there. And there wasn't anybody in there, but I did notice as I was looking between the stacks of books, there was a man sitting on a little stool, you know, one of those things that if you're too short, you need to stand on to reach the top book. And I recognized him. We had a little niceties over the years, but I went up to him. I said, "Do you mind if I, good to see you. You mind if I pull up a stool and just kind of catch up?" He said, "No, go ahead." So just the two of us, and you were talking about different things. I don't know if he gave me one of his books, I gave him one of mine or something. And I said, "Do you mind if I ask you a question I've always wondered about?" He said, "No, go ahead." I said, "Of your seven habits, is there one habit that you think is more important for all these 10,000 people in this convention center than any of the others?" And of course, you guys probably know it was Stephen Covey. And he said, "Well, not really. They're all kind of linked together, and they're all equally powerful." And I said, I know that. But again, imagine all these people. Is there one that you think there is more a sense of urgency that we absolutely should be focusing on?" And he kind of looked around. He kind of had a gleam in his eye. He said, "Oh, yes." I said, "Really?" "Okay." And he said, "Seek to understand before you are understood." And we talked about that and basically agreed that learning and development, we're so eager and so wanting to help that we we start pushing our competency models and our learning paths and our learning solutions and all those things. We got a new competency model. What he said is, what we need to do rather than peddling our wares is to go across the bridge, invite ourselves, gently, tactfully invite ourselves, and seek to understand. Resist the temptation to say, oh, we got just the thing for you. But ask the second question and the third question. And if they say, well, some of my guys are having trouble with performance. Tell me about that. What that does is it gets them talking. It gets them investing. We learn what their needs are rather than trying to kind of force our solutions on them. And it works beautifully, whether it's the line manager, supervisor, the senior leaders. And I have just made a habit of doing that. It's kind of my personality anyway, is just to try and get to know people. And what happens then is you've earned the right by listening, by reflecting back, and almost every time they'll say, you know what, I'm wondering if there's some way that we can work together. So that was the one thing that I still remember, is go to them, you know, virtually or, you know, however we can do it. We talk about human nature. Yes, that is a challenge. But the human spirit is the flip side of that. People are desperate to be understood. They're desperate to be heard. The last thing they need is for them to take a breath and us to start trying to ram a competency model down their throat or some kind of new training. And it's very simple, but it's not easy, because a lot of times we like to play that verbal ping pong. You did that? Wait till you hear what I did. And it just shuts down that trust.
Right. What an incredible story. I got a smile on my face listening to you and hearing the passion in your voice. I want to flip that. I know that was an ad hoc question. Based on that, from the practitioner point of view, Dr. Kirkpatrick, how would you pitch and bring that to organizational leadership in terms of trying to explain the real value of effective training and evaluation on their business? Give us that other side of the coin.
Okay. Well, again, the first time when you say to organizational leadership, be very savvy about who you're pitching it to, you know, and make sure it's someone that is most likely to be receptive. And I want everybody that's listening to this, picture someone in your mind, imagine a face or two that you think, there are people that already have a relationship. They're the kind of people that are coaching their employees. They're the kind of people that come up with innovative ideas. Those are the ones who you pitch it to. And you really pitch the whole thing that we need to get the results and we want to do our best to help you. But the way that we could best help you is to help your line managers and supervisors help their people do their job better. And you just kind of back them up. You use the GPS approach. Or how about this? And new parents, they go to parent training class for 6 weeks when they got their 3-year-old and their 1-year-old. And then what are they going to do? Wait until they're 18 and 20 and see how they turned out? Well, that's ridiculous. There needs to be all kinds of monitoring and adjusting along the way, dealing with what kids do. And, you know, it's silly to think that we can send anybody to training and that enough of that will stick long enough to really make a difference. And we need it. I mean, they better go to parent training and learn the skills and learn what they need to do. But it's about monitoring and adjusting along the way. And if you make a reasonable argument and you just ask for, how about if we try one simple, single proof of concept, a pilot study, they'll almost always say yes.
So, Dr. Kirkpatrick, if you could distill your great experience and your insight and your expertise into 3 or 4 sentences, what are your last words of advice for this conversation for practitioners?
Well, it would be the words that come to my mind is more meaningful conversations. Start with your peers and talk about these things, because some of them are not going to go down without a fight, thinking that we're criticizing their training. You know, we're not criticizing the training. We're just saying it's not enough. And then be bold for the mission. You guys, you're right. I am bold about this stuff. I'm not bold about Jim Kirkpatrick. I'm just a regular guy who ended up in a really neat opportunity and am doing the best I can. But I'm just a regular guy. But I am bold. I will speak boldly about the mission, but not what I've written or, you know, degrees or anything like that. and seek to understand. You know, start those conversations, ask some probing questions, and then let the chips fall, because they will fall. And some of them will fall the other way, where people are saying, I'm not interested. But there will be some that fall your way and become opportunities. And then you just try and get them to agree and commit to one practical effort that can show that the power of post-training support and accountability will drive the performance, and what we call leading indicators will just pop, and it will become really obvious that the key is performance, and it won't be hard to get traction from that.
Great insight, great advice. Dr. Kirkpatrick, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate your expertise, your experience, and your insight.
Great. And if you guys are, anybody listening is interested in more information, we've got a website, as you might imagine. It's www.kirkpatrickpartners.com, and we'd be glad to help you.
And again, for our listeners, the book is Kirkpatrick's Four Levels of Training Evaluation.
Dr. Kirkpatrick, I really love this conversation. Thank you so much.
Well, yeah, thank you for asking me. I enjoyed it too.
Thank you so much. Thanks again, and be well.
Okay, thank you guys. Bye.
To learn more about the Kirkpatrick Partners of the New World Kirkpatrick Model, please contact 770-302-3500 or by email at information@kirkpatrickpartners.com. In addition, please check out their website, where you can join the Kirkpatrick community and gain access to a great and free resource library containing 100-plus items simply by completing the free and fast registration at kirkpatrickpartners.com. This contact information is also included in the show notes. Please join us in our next episode as we discuss winning the ERP game with Mr. David Stefanik. Mr. Stefanik is author of the book, Winning the ERP Game, that shares insight, lessons learned, best practices, and coaching moments focused on the classic pillars of enterprise resource planning and digital transformation, that is, people, processes, and technology. Mr. Stefanik is also founder of STX Consulting, which provides SAP and ERP advisory consulting focused on enterprise excellence, value realization, and governance across people, process, and technology. We hope to have you join us again next week.
Listeners, thank you for joining us on today's episode. We are incredibly excited and grateful to have friends, colleagues, and mentors join us on our podcast. We have an incredible lineup of guests, including ERP and organizational change speakers, authors, professors, researchers, pioneers in the field, practitioners, PE partners, business executives, ERP vendors, and organizational stakeholders. We invite you to leave us feedback and a review, because we want to make this the most useful and insightful podcast you listen to, and we need your help to do so.
Thank you, listeners, for being with us again this week as we seek to, one, promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community, two, contribute to the field of ERP organizational change, and three, bring research and practice closer together. Please join us again next week as we discuss the latest ERP organizational change research, practice, and stories. Our podcast will draw on knowledge from extensive research, collaborative learning, and practitioner expertise and experience.
From everyone here on the team, Jack, and myself, we wish you a great week, and we hope to see you again soon on another episode.
Hashtag the ERP Organizational Change Journal. Have a fantastic week.
Bye for now.